Everybody, welcome to Blind Like Me. I'm just all relaxed and comfortable and feeling good and having a good morning. Today is the, what is the date of today? Today is the 23rd. 23rd, yeah, because my sister-in-law's birthday is tomorrow. The 23rd of the month of March, 2007, and we're doing Blind Like Me, and we're visiting with Nancy Summer. And how are you?
I'm doing fine, Phil. How about you?
I'm good. We did this once before, and when we got all through, Nancy said, "Well, I wasn't through talking," so we decided that we would do it again because she had some stuff she wanted to talk about, and I didn't know it, and we've gotten to know each other a little bit better, and you know, it's really funny how you meet people. You know, I would perceive you as just a nice, easygoing, gentle person.
Well, thanks, Phil. I just kind of relaxed, and you know, I'm laid back. Everybody says I'm laid back, and I just kind of take things as they come and try not to stress out about it.
Well, you know, you get ideas about people and about how they what kind of persons they are, and I think you're just a sweetheart. Just to be honest about it, I just think you're a really neat lady.
Thank you.
And I don't know you at all. Never met you in my life, and may never. But I just, you know, just from talking to you, I just think you're just a nice, easygoing person. Anyway, now that we've talked about how much we love each other, let's do Blind Like Me. Why don't we do that?
Sounds good.
You're in Philadelphia.
That's right.
Correct.
I live in South Philly. I have a house. I bought it about 8 years ago, and I've been in for 24 years, and finally, a friend of mine gave me a proverbial kick in the backside and said, "Go buy a house. You're wasting all that money. All you have are rent receipts to show. Go out and buy a house and have something to show for your money." So you did. I did. I got in touch with a realtor. Went to one of those seminars where they say, "Oh, we're going to get you money, you know, government grants and all that stuff." And met a realtor there, and she put me in touch with a lady from South Philly, which is where I wanted to get the house. And it was, you know, smooth sailing pretty much. I knew where I wanted to live, what area. She got some spec sheets, showed me some houses. I picked one. And 4 months from the day I saw the house, I moved in. We worked really well together because when she'd have to go away, she'd give me the numbers of the people I had to call. And I'd call up and scream at them and threaten them and stuff and, you know, tell them to get moving. And that's how we got things moving so quickly. Oh, I threatened this one girl.
Did you?
Yes.
Threatened to do what?
Well, I said I was going to be her worst nightmare in the daytime. I was supposed to get the report back from the, you know, they do a checkup on the house.
Sure.
Know?
Oh, yeah, an inspection.
Yeah, the inspection.
Yeah.
And they were late in getting the papers to us, and we were working out a contract. So I called her up, and she says, "Well, I don't know. The girl that, you know, usually isn't here, blah, blah, blah." I says, "Look," I said, "you don't get those papers faxed to me within 5 minutes. I'm going to be the worst nightmare in your daytime." And I said, "I live in South Philly. Does that mean anything to you?" I had those papers in 5 minutes.
See, and I was just telling everybody what a nice, gentle, easygoing, sweet person you are. And here you threaten to kill somebody.
Well, you know, I wanted my house, and I was in love with it already, and I didn't want to lose it.
Sometimes you have to do things like that when you're dealing with the public. Well, this person who said they were going to get you grants, did they come through with any of that?
No. No, I went there, and, it you know, it's just like a lot of talk, and I started looking in the phone book, and I found some places where like HUD, and then there was the Philadelphia Council for Community Advancement. And really what they do is they kind of counsel you on how to buy a house. And when I went into Mr. Estrada's office, you know, they do a credit check, and he called up a bank, and he was able to get me pre-approved for a loan. And then he said, you know, you get a realtor and we'll work together. And we did. It was really a smooth transaction. Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of nightmares about getting houses, and it wasn't that way for me.
Well, buying a house is a good thing most times. Of course, if you buy a house and you own the house, then if the air conditioner goes out, it's your problem.
Exactly. And I've had all kinds of problems. I had a very bad roof problem. A guy put a roof on for me about 3 years ago, and a year later it started leaking. I could not get him to come back here to look at it, and even threatened to take him to court, and, you know, nothing ever happened. So I got another roofer, and he came up, and what happened was this other guy had put flashing around the return valve where my central air and central heating is, and he only did it on three sides. So the water was coming in on the fourth side and going down and coming through my back bedroom ceiling and really caused some damage. So they put another piece of flashing up there. They recoated it. And even though it wasn't their roof, they gave me a two-year guarantee.
Yeah, you can't. Suing those people is a waste of time because they don't have anything. They don't have any real property. So what are you going to get? I mean, you can't get money from somebody who doesn't have any money.
Exactly.
So they, you know, they don't. But that's really ignorant, just to put flashing on three sides. He knew that was going to leak. Had to know it.
Oh, he had to.
Yeah, he had to know that.
These people were so professional. The second group I got, and I would recommend them to anybody. And they'll be coming back to, you know, check my roof in another year, and we'll put another coating on, and we'll keep doing that until it's time to put another roof on.
Well, I was going to say, somebody may live in the Philadelphia area. What's the name of this roofer? Do you know? Do you remember?
Sure. Their name is Ryder Roofing.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have the phone number or anything like that in front of me, but they're really great. They're in the phone book, I believe.
Ryder Roofing in Philadelphia. If you live in that area, they're good people. So this is
they're great.
The Nancy Summers stamp of a future champ.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. You have your own house, the roof leaks, it's your baby. You got to do something about it.
But that's right.
But owning a house is good. I've owned several houses. In fact, this building I'm in now, I built out of money from selling a house that I had paid many, many years on. Got sweated blood. I remember counting change to make the payments on that house where Don Shaw lives. But it all paid off because I actually, you know, real estate prices most times go up. And so the value in your home increases. And it's not a way to make a fortune, but it's certainly a way to come out. You know, most times, well, I've lost money on a house. I sold one too quick one time and lost a good chunk of change. Ended up buying another house before I sold the first one, which you never want to do.
You don't know if that person's mortgage is going to go through, and then you're stuck with two of them.
Well, you know, I thought I could sell this house I had, and I wanted another house. This house, in fact, is the house Don Shaw's living in. It had a swimming pool, and I wanted a house with a swimming pool. That's what I wanted, I thought. And so I didn't sell the house that I was living in. But anyway, it all worked out, and here I am. Okay, you were born and raised in Philadelphia, right? Is that right?
No, I was born and raised in a small town called Oxford, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's in southern Chester County. It's near the Maryland line. And grew up there and went to public school from first grade till the middle of seventh grade. My parents wanted to send me to the Overbrook School for the Blind, but my eye doctor said, no, send her to public school for as long as she can go and then make the transaction, you know, transition to the school for the blind. And I did pretty well for the first three grades, but then you get peer pressure after that, and, you know, it's, you know, don't play with that blind kid. You know, she's weird. You know, she has funny-looking eyes. And the kids would, like, you know, they would avoid me like the plague.
Kids can be mean to kids and are, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's I would say it's just as bad, if not worse, than you know, now than it was then.
Well, you hear, I don't remember what I was reading in there, but you really hear good things about the Overbrook School. And, you know, according to what you hear, that they are really dedicated to improving the lives of blind people.
They are. And when I went to school there, I mean, the education was fabulous. As the years went by, you know, you just don't have your normal blind person anymore. You've got them with a lot of different problems, like hearing or motor skills,
yeah,
you know, problems there. So the school expanded to include these people. And they really had to, because if they didn't, the school would have shut down. So now they have a school that covers a lot of areas. They have a lot of programs to fit the needs of the person.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not one program, and you have to mold yourself to that program. They work with the people. They also have a foreign exchange student program where vision-impaired students from other countries will come there.
I believe what I read is they're celebrating their, would it be 150th anniversary?
What, 175th.
175th, that's right, you're right. 175 years ago, Overbrook School for the Blind was begun.
Mm-hmm. And in June, they're going to have a big gala at one of the fancy hotels here in Philly, and
yeah,
the black tie affair. And I'm hoping to go. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you just hear all kinds of things good about Overbrook, the Overbrook School for the Blind. 175 years. Of course, most kids, like you said, that are just blind and have no other physical problems or mental problems, go to public school nowadays.
Yeah, they do. They mainstream them. I guess because of my own experiences in public school where, you know, I was treated so badly, I'm kind of against mainstreaming. I think it should be their choice whether they want to go. I don't think they should be forced.
Yeah, but it in the seventh grade, so you would have been about 13, they
yeah,
sent you for your seventh grade year to Overbrook School.
I was there from January of 1968, which would have been about mid-year,
mm-hmm,
until I graduated in 1973.
Now, but did your parents move to Philadelphia at that time or
no,
not?
No, they still lived in Oxford, so they would drive to Philly, which was about an hour, on Sundays, drop me off, and then come get me on Friday afternoon.
Okay, so you were a weekend student. You went home every weekend.
I went home on the weekends, but as I got older and got into more activities, I started staying on the weekends.
Yeah,
by choice, because I had so much fun. I mean, we had some great house parents that would do stuff with us. When I was in 11th grade, we were the first girls' dorm to have house parents. The boys would have them, but this was the first time the girls had them. And we had a great time. We used to go on picnics, and we had parties, and they even let us have a cat for a pet, and which they took with them when they left. And I guess they had her till she died. But we just used to have a ball.
Now, by house parents, you mean a couple that actually lived...
Exactly, and he was very good looking, and of course we girls that could see, we were all in love with him, you know.
Yeah, that's normal.
We all had a crush on him.
Now, we didn't have that, and so this was a married couple that lived there in the girls' dorm and helped take care of you, and so it was almost like, it wasn't almost like, but it was a lot closer to family life than...
Exactly.
Yeah, than just having some old grouchy woman like we had.
We had those, too. First year I was in Overbrook, first 6 months, we went through six house mothers in 5 months.
I don't know where they got those grouchy old women that they had at the Texas school. But,
I don't know.
They might have a home somewhere, because they didn't care anything about blind kids. I don't know why they were there. I guess I never was able to figure that out. But that's a nice arrangement with a family and a cat, being able to, you know, because pets are such a quieting, calming thing for all kids, should have dogs and cats around.
Oh, it was great. And the last year that I was in school, we actually lived off campus in a house that the school owned. And we learned how to take care of a house, how to clean it, do laundry on our own, cooking, going shopping, everything like that.
How did you get back and forth to your classes, to the school?
It was only a block away, and you had taken mobility training either during the school year or a couple of years they had mobility training classes during the summer. It was a 4-week course, and it was a lot. That was fun too.
Now, did you?
We had the instructors, and I had Mr. Ness, who was a lot of fun. He was a music nut. So we could talk about music, but he was also one that let you kind of plan your route, and we used to always plan them around hoagie shops.
Mm-hmm.
He would go and have hoagies, and the fun thing was he'd have me write a report on whether the hoagie was any good or would you recommend this place for, you know, a future trip or anything like that. It was fun.
Now, you had, there was a house parent living in the house with you girls, though, right?
Yes, we had a house mother in the house with us.
Yeah.
A couple of years before, they actually had a house father and a house mother, but when we moved in, we just had the house mother. It was a different person. She was really nice.
This is in the off-campus house we're talking about.
Exactly, uh-huh.
And a little
Filipino lady who was a teacher at the school, and her feeling was, girls, I don't, you know, care what you do, you can stay up as late as you want to, just do your homework and get to school on time.
And that's what's important.
Exactly.
And she's right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, she's on the mark. That's all that's important. The rest is window dressing.
And she was really great. Of course, you always try to experiment with things, and I remember one time another girl and I, we decided we wanted to try smoking. And we went out on the back porch late at night, and we were smoking, and one of the neighbors saw us, and she told the house mother.
Yeah.
So she called us into the living room after school, and she says, look, the neighbor saw you smoking. I am not going to say a word to the dorm supervisor if you promise you'll never do it again. And we said, okay, we won't. So if we wanted to try, we went off campus. Way off campus.
did that stop your smoking, or did you become a smoker?
No, I only tried it for about 6 months, and I didn't get anything out of it, so I never smoked.
Yeah, if that had happened at the blind school, they would have probably shot one of us. Maybe two or three of us, if they caught us smoking. No, actually, they caught me smoking when I was a kid and expelled me from the school for the blind. That was the first time they expelled me, but that's a different story. We'll get into that someday. Anyway, good experience at Overbrook School. You liked it. You enjoyed it. You had a good time. You graduated, and in your class, I would figure with probably pretty good grades.
Yes, I did pretty well in school. I felt that since I was getting a good education, I should take advantage of it.
Yeah. Well, a lot of us didn't have sense enough to do that. I'm glad you did. Okay, graduated high school. We've asked you this before, but let's do it again. What did you think you could do to make a living? How were you going to structure your life?
Well, I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to teach special ed, and I actually wanted to go back to Overbrook and teach. But the Blindness and Visual Services would not pay for me to go to college. My parents couldn't afford it, but they would pay for me to go to business school. So I went to Goodwin Business School in Pittsburgh for a year, and it had supposedly a program for vision-impaired students, and they really didn't. They just lumped you in with the sighted ones, and you had your lessons and typing on tape. But it was a good experience because living in Pittsburgh, which was about 6 hours away from Oxford, it taught me a lot more about independence. I had to make decisions on my own. You know, it wasn't that my parents could be coming up there if something went wrong. I had to deal with it. So it was a really good experience, and I enjoyed the program. And when I got out of school, I started looking for a job, and I had taken the civil service test while I was at Goodwin, and had spent about 4 months looking for a job. And in September of 2004, I went on an interview at a hospital, and they wanted me. And I was staying with my brother and sister-in-law at the time, who lived in Philly.
2004?
I'm sorry, did I say 2004? I meant 1974.
That's what I was thinking. It must be 74. Wait a minute, let's backtrack just a second.
You have
pretty good vision. I don't think we mentioned that. You can't drive a car, but you're a what we would call a high partial, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. I've had seven operations since the time I was five. My mother had toxoplasmosis when she was pregnant with me. And you can get that from either handling raw meat and not washing your hands right away, you know, and putting them near or in your mouth. Or you can also get it from handling cat feces, like cleaning a litter box and not cleaning your hands. We lived next door to my grandmother, who had a farm, and my parents had a garden, so of course the cats thought that was a great litter box. So I think that's where it happened, you know. So, but I feel blessed with the vision I've got. It can be a lot worse. I have friends that have never seen, so I really feel blessed.
Yeah, and your vision, of course, helped you at this business school. You didn't have to do lessons on Braille. You didn't have to do. You could see the blackboard, or you could see well enough to do the lessons they had for you.
Exactly. I have reading glasses. It looks like they cut the bottoms off of Coke glasses frames, you know, but they help.
But you can read with them, and that's the important thing.
That's the important thing.
All right, it's 1974, and you've done a lot of looking for a job and really haven't found anything.
I actually had a job with a hospital, and I came home to my brother and sister-in-law's, and my dad called, and he says, you have a job interview with a Mr. Poindexter at a medical center. He said, this is a state job. If they want you, you take that job. He says, you're going to have the best benefits you could ever have.
Hey, Daddy was right.
He was right.
Yeah.
And 32 and a half years later, I'm still working for the state.
Still working for the state. However, not doing the same thing you started out doing.
No, I was with the medical center for 20 months, and the last 8 months of that time, I was the director's secretary. And then I transferred to the Bureau of Vital Statistics, where I typed birth certificates and birth records, and then to Central Clerical Support, where I did a lot of typing forms when we were trying to check up on people who were receiving welfare and also supposedly working.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm with the Bureau of Child Support Enforcement, where I work as clerical.
Well, you skipped your little story. You skipped your story about how you got the job as this guy's secretary, this first job that you had.
Oh, right, yeah.
You skipped that little story right over it.
I'm sorry.
Let's go back and do that.
Okay. He actually didn't want me in the beginning because he'd never dealt with a vision-impaired person. But because I guess they had quotas that they had to hire so many people, you know, disabled people, he had to hire me.
Yeah.
So I worked for the first 12 months as a receptionist typist, and then his secretary got sick, and she left. And then the lady that he hired after her got sick and left. So he decided to bring me up, and by that time I'd proven that I could, you know, do the job. And I was his secretary until the place was sold to a private organization. And his reason for hiring me, or actually for bringing me upstairs to work with him, was I was the most reliable. He said, you know, those other girls downstairs, he says, they would stay home for a headache in their big toe.
But you came to work and appreciated the job, and you were there and but he was initially skeptical about hiring a blind person to begin with. But
right.
I'm sure the state had a quota that said he had to.
Exactly.
So he ended up with you, and you proved to him that blind people can actually function and he ended up taking you up to be his personal secretary.
Right.
Yeah.
And when the medical center was was turned over to a private organization. They wanted me, but they wanted me to take a $1,000 cut in pay, which I didn't want to do and couldn't afford to. He helped me find another job and didn't even bother with the other ones. He figured they could find their own jobs, but I was worth the time and the effort to try and get into another type of state employment.
So he made sure that you had another state job, so you kept that pension, you kept that retirement, and you kept all those state benefits. You've had them all these years. 32 and a half years. And at 35 years, you can retire, right?
I'll be retiring on January 29th, 2010, which will be my 55th birthday. Actually, my anniversary date is in October of 2009, but I've been told that if you work at least a month into the new year, the following fiscal year, it's better for you tax-wise.
And so that January 29th is your birthday?
It'll be my birthday, and I'm going to retire on my birthday.
You'll be 60. You'll be how old?
I'll be 55.
65?
55.
Oh, 55.
Uh-huh.
So you still got a lot. That's wonderful to be able to retire at 55.
Oh, it'll be great. You know, I'm going to be young enough to enjoy the retirement. And there's so much to do here in South Philly, so many activities I can get involved in.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about being the church secretary. There's a couple of senior citizen centers around that I either am going to volunteer or, you know, I can also go to the activities and take some trips and just have a good time, really enjoy myself, enjoy my house, enjoy the neighborhood. I feel like I've missed out on a lot because I've had to work, you know, but I'm not complaining that I'm working, but there's just things that go on here I wish I could get involved in, but can't because of my job. So once I retire, then I can start getting involved.
Well, retirement is all right, but you need something to do when you retire, and sounds like you're going to have plenty to do. Okay, this is about where we got last time.
Mm-hmm.
This is about where we got. We had you 30-something years with the state, working jobs, still working for the state, going in. What do you have, every other Friday off, every third Friday off, or some kind of...
I have one Friday off a month.
Okay.
We work, it's a schedule, they call it alternate work schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You work 3 weeks. In my case, 8:30 to 5 with a half-hour lunch, Monday through Thursday, and then Friday you get an hour lunch. The fourth week, it's Monday through Wednesday, 8:30 to 5 with a half-hour lunch, and then Thursday with an hour lunch, and then Friday you get off. And it's really nice because you can plan to do things, and I think it's helped a lot with attendance at work. The people that are taking advantage of this program, I think they come in a lot more regularly than having to take time off to do this and that.
Yeah, because if they don't, they've blown the program. They don't get the day off.
Right. Well, no, they can take their annual leave or their sick leave. You'll still get the day off.
Yeah.
But it's that they can plan whatever they have to do on that day off instead of having to use up their annual and sick leave to do it.
Yeah. So once a month you get a 3-day weekend.
Exactly.
I would have loved that when I worked. I remember, I've got the weekend off. I used to just love weekends off because it was always some remote. Saturday morning, you had to go do a remote at the hardware store, the vacuum store. They always had some remote on Saturday morning. It just screwed up the weekend because you had to go and do 4 hours in the public. And
you
know, when I was doing radio, and it just ruined the entire weekend. All right, now this is about where we got last time, and there are two things you said you wanted to talk about. One of them was Neil Diamond.
Oh, yes.
Is that right?
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, tell us about your infatuation with Neil Diamond.
Well, I guess I am kind of infatuated with him. I've been a fan of his since I was 11, but I never got to see him in concert due to, money, location, you know, things like that, until 1996. And I went to my first Neil Diamond concert. I got free tickets from a friend, and I was able to take two more people. And even though they were up in the top of the Wachovia Center, you know, up in the nosebleed section, in the pot section, because they were smoking up there.
Yeah.
Okay. We came out very happy.
Is that right?
It was a great concert, and I definitely was in love with him after that. and I've got just about all of his CDs, and have actually traveled out of Philly to go see him. I've gone to State College, Wilkes-Barre, and Atlantic City. And when I was in Wilkes-Barre in 2002, we were actually stayed at the same hotel where he was staying. And,
really?
You know, it's, I don't know how these people find out where he's staying. It's, sometimes I think it's just luck. You know, you think about the hotels around in the area and you think, well, where would Neil Diamond stay? You know, what do these places have to offer? And then you just, you book your room and you hope and pray, and sometimes you get lucky.
Yeah, it's not going to be Motel 6. We know that, right?
Well, actually, yeah. He was staying at the Best Western.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you'd think he'd say someplace a little fancier, but no. This one was a nice place. So anyway, they have a thing they call lobby call, which is when the band comes down to get on the bus to go to the venue. And the fans gather in the lobby, and they're told by Neil's security that you have to stand in a certain place. And the security's great. I mean, they have to look out for Neil and the band, so they've got to keep us pretty much under control. And the fans that go to these things are, you know, really great people. They're nice folk. They just like Neil, you know. They're just normal folks.
Well, it's mostly girls, though, right?
Well, you got some guys, too. You know, you may run across somebody that may be a few fries short of a happy meal, and you really have to watch them. But most of these people are just a lot of fun, you know, great people. So we stand in a certain area. And we're told the usual rules: do not approach Neil, don't approach the band. If they want to come over and talk to you, they will. Right after 2001, you know, 9/11, they weren't accepting any kind of gifts, or they weren't doing autographs or anything, but that's kind of laxed up. And this time, Neil came down, and he stopped, and people were taking pictures, and he says, "What are you all doing here? You just missed half the show." You know, and we were laughing and joking. And I had just seen him in State College three nights prior to that. I had a front row seat, and it was the first time since my operation in, I think it was 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd gotten some vision back in my eyes from the surgery.
Uh-huh.
It was the first time I'd actually seen him.
And you were, you were in the front row, so you could actually see him.
I would see everything, you know. And I just decided, this is my chance, now or never. I'm going to talk to this guy. And so I said, "Hey, Neil, thanks for Tuesday night." And he was ready to walk out the door, and he turns around and he goes, "What?" I said, "Thanks for Tuesday night. I was able to see you." And then one of the other girls spoke up, because I was kind of, you know, off of my own little world. And she says, "Well, Nancy's got a vision problem, and she had a front row seat, and she was able to see the concert." And he says, "Oh." And he says, "Well, where are you tonight?" And I said, "Well, I'm on the side, second row." He says, "Okay." So that night, he at the concert, he was singing, and at one point during the show, he walked over, and I had my little Neil Diamond teddy bear, and I kind of waved it in the air, and he pointed right at me. So it was like, you know, it was sort of a little connection there.
And you could you see him pointing at you? See well enough?
I was close enough I could see that, you know, so I was really excited about that.
You realize we've lost all the men in the audience, don't you?
We've lost what?
All the men in the audience.
Yeah, I guess they all left, yeah.
Yeah, because this is a girl, absolutely girl groupie Neil Diamond thing. But you know, everybody's got to love somebody, don't they, huh?
Oh, yeah. And then, but I got to tell you this one story, and then you know, I can quit.
Oh, no, it's fine. Go ahead. We're enjoying it.
6 months later, we were in Reading to see him. And we stayed at the same hotel. And the day after the concert, there was about eight of us there. And, of course, the security went through their routine. And we were standing there, and Neil comes down, and he came over and started talking to us. And this one girl asked for an autograph, and he gave the autograph. And I said, Neil, may I please have my picture taken with you? And about that time, this guy that was there walked over and put his arm around Neil and got his girlfriend to take a picture. And I thought, oh, no, that's it. My chance is blown. You know, security's going to grab him and whisk him right out of there. The next thing you know, he reaches out with his arm and says, come here. And he pulls me over, and somebody took the picture. So I got to meet him. I got to have my picture taken with him. It was really great.
And he pulled you, touched you. He actually physically
he
touched you.
He reached out with his arm and said, come here.
Come here. Come here.
And pulled me right over. And I turned around to say thank you afterwards, and just that quick, he was gone. If I didn't have the picture, I wouldn't believe it happened.
But it happened, and you know it happened.
It happened. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's so funny. That is so funny. My sister loves Neil Diamond, you know?
That's really. Well, we should get in touch with her, because every year in Chicago, there is a Neil Diamond birthday party. Neil does not show up, but we have a wonderful time. It's held at the Embassy Suites. Most of the time, people come in on Friday and leave Sunday, but there's a few of us that come in on Thursday night and leave Monday.
You go every year?
Well, I've actually only gone to two. I was planning to go in 2004, and I had broken my leg, so I couldn't go.
Yeah.
So I waited a couple of years for it to heal, and I went in 2006. I had a wonderful time. I went this past year. What we do, we have activities. Friday night we go out for pizza, and then when we get back we play Neil Diamond games, such as Meal of Fortune, Diamond Jeopardy, Neil or No Neil, and Neilo, which is like bingo. And I almost won at Neilo this time. I had one penny short.
Is that right?
Yeah. And it was Coverall, too.
How about Neil Dupre?
Who?
Neil Dupre.
Neil Dupre?
Neil Dupre.
Oh. You're funny, Bill. That's all right.
Excuse me.
Well, I guess some of us did do that. You know, if we wanted to meet him or get to a concert, we did that.
And so it's just Neil Diamond groupies, wall to wall.
Men and women.
Oh, lots more women than men.
Oh, yes, but those guys do show up. And then Saturday, after breakfast, we have Brother Love's Shameless Choir, and we practice a song to sing at the banquet that night. And they have a great banquet in the evening. It's, soup to nuts. Really, really good food. We have dancing, and there's a fellow by the name of Tom Sage, who is a Neil Diamond impersonator, and he's a dead ringer for Neil in the 1980s. And he does an hour show. And there's a lady named Marcia who goes around with a video camera, and if you want, you can do a birthday message to Neil. And this video, along with all the activities that go on the whole weekend, is made. You can purchase a copy of it, and also a copy of it is sent to Neil's office in California.
And how many people are at this gala festive celebration?
Somewhere between 80 and 100.
Oh, so it's a very intimate, small group.
It's very intimate, very small. But I guess the hotel loves us because they let us come back every year. This has been going on for 21 years.
That's just the wildest thing I've ever heard. And are you going this year?
I can't wait for 2008. I've got two places to go. I've got Chicago, and then if you have the thing in Houston, I'll be there too.
So it's in 2008 will be the next Neil. You just do this every 2 years?
We do it every year. We do it in January.
Okay.
The weekend closest to Neil's birthday, which is January 24th.
And yours is the 29th.
Right.
So are you under the same sign as Neil? I guess you are, aren't you?
Yeah, we're both Aquarians.
That's just amazing. Well, it's funny. I mean, it's funny, but why not?
Yeah, you know, you only live once, and you get to meet a lot of neat people. We actually have people come from overseas. There's a girl named Gail who comes, and she's from Germany. And there's a girl from England. Her name is Angela. A couple other people have been there from England. And they just have a great time.
Well, if they had a Merle Haggard birthday celebration, I'd go.
Well, why not?
Because he's my favorite entertainer of all time. All right, Neil Diamond, Fascination with Neil Diamond. Now, there was one other subject you wanted to talk about, and I don't remember what it was. I hope you do.
It was about the cats that I have.
About the cat that you have.
I have seven of them.
You have what?
I have seven cats.
You have seven cats.
Uh-huh.
Well, I was going to come see you, but now I'm not.
Are you allergic?
No, I just don't. I don't... Cats...
You're not crazy about them.
Well, I don't dislike cats, but cats are so sneaky that they just bother me. I'm a dog guy. You're either a dog guy or a cat person.
I like both. And actually,
really?
Some people have said my cats are more like dogs than cats because they'll come and they jump in your lap and they won't leave you alone. And, you know, just like a dog, you know, a dog always will come to you and want attention. Well, so will these guys.
But they don't bark.
They don't bark.
Yeah.
But I can leave them all seven in the house and they don't cause a ruckus.
My brother-in-law has cats and we have dogs, and my little nieces and nephews, that his children have now gotten used to my dogs and have learned to like the dogs. They didn't at first. You have seven cats that live with you.
Right. I used to show them I showed for about 15 years, but unfortunately the people that I used to go with, they're up in years and their health isn't good, so I think our show days are over.
You showed them as in you went to cat shows of some sort?
Right. They have four classes in a cat show. They have the championship class, which is the purebred cats that are not altered. They have the alter class, which are the championship cats that are altered. They have the kitten class, which are kittens 4 to 8 months.
Now, altered means fixed?
Neutering and spaying, yeah, neutering and spayed.
Okay, now they have not altered, altered, and what else?
The kitten class, which are kittens that are 4 to 8 months. And then they have the household pet class, which are the... mixed breed cats that you would get from a shelter or take in as a stray. And I'm mainly showed in the household pet class.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a lot more competition in the household pet class than there was in the other three, because there's no written standards for a household pet class, where the other three classes you have written standards that these cats have to meet as far as appearance and the shapes of their heads and their ears and everything. It's, you know, it's a lot more, it's tougher. But there's more competition in the household pet class.
See. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, it would be good if they just had a big box of mice and the one that killed the most won. I guess not. Kind of my perception of the big cat show. So you actually took your cat and you groomed your cat. What do you do to make your cat stand out from other cats? Do cats do tricks?
No. They don't have to. It's not like the dog show. They don't have to be paraded around in a ring. They do have show rings, but in the rings are cages. There's usually about 12 cages to a ring. And you put your cat in the judging ring.
Mm-hmm.
The judge has a table, and they bring them out. And in a household pet class, they look for appearance, and that covers cleanliness. They check the ears, the coats, make sure they don't have any ear mites or fleas.
That would be good to check those things.
They check for conditioning, whether the cat is too thin or too fat, and personality plays a part in it. You know, you're going to have a cat that may hiss a little bit or growl. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
So,
and some of them actually flip out, you know.
I'm sure they do.
But, you know, the judges take that into consideration, the hissing and the growling. They just don't want to be, lunch.
My brother-in-law had a cat that would jump up on your lap and allow you to pet it, and as it jumped off your lap, it would claw the crap out of you. Her name was Hobbs. I don't know if it's a he or a she, but I haven't gone back over there. But this cat would come and encourage you to pet her, let's call it a her, and then simply for the privilege of clawing your arm.
Oh, gee.
So, that cat and I did not,
You don't get along.
I didn't care for that. Here, kitty, kitty, kitty. Just didn't. Well, all right, okay. We're in the general pet class. How would one win that division? What would determine your cat from my cat?
Okay, if my cat was in better condition, better groomed, in nice shape, not too fat, not too thin, and after that, the personality comes in. Then after that, it's basically what the judge likes. Some judges like striped cats, tabby cats. Some judges like the black and white. So after that, it's kind of just what the judge's fancy. And they have two classes there. They have the what they call the all-breed class, and that's when they judge the long-haired cats and the short-haired cats together. And then they have the specialty class, which is where the long hairs and the short hairs are judged separately. And in the all-breed, you can get 10 places. In the specialty, it's 5. And they have ribbons. You don't get money. You just get ribbons. And my first tugger, who was adopted from an animal shelter, he used to do very well. He had the personality of Morris the cat, kind of laid back, do whatever. And
okay.
He used to do very well. The judges liked him.
And you would take this cat in the car.
Before we go, he'd get a bath the night before.
Uh-huh.
And then the next day we would go to the show hall. And you have what they call a show cage, which the cat stays in that before they go to the judging ring. You decorate your show cage with curtains that people either make or you can. I usually would get like a sheet, twin size is big enough, and you drape it over 3 sides. And the top of your cage, and you could put all kinds of decorations up.
Because you want the cat to be able to see out. You want people to be able to see your cat.
Exactly, because these shows are open to the public, and people
pictures
come
of pictures of birds that he killed.
Yeah,
I guess not. Huh?
If you have them, I guess. He had a picture on the top of his cage of him and Tug McGraw, the baseball player.
Uh-huh.
But he was named after Tug McGraw. And I managed to work it out so that he could have a picture taken with Tug. And everybody thought it was Tug McGraw's cat.
And you worked it out with the baseball player, or did you put this picture together out of composite?
I knew Tug personally, so I worked it out that I would meet him at the ballpark one day with Tug, the cat, and we took a picture.
How did you happen to know Tug McGraw personally?
Well, I'm a big Phillies fan, and back in 81, we took a group from Overbrook to the ball game, and we arranged to take the people down outside the clubhouse, and some of the ball players came out to sign autographs and talk to them, mm-hmm. have pictures taken, and Tug was one of them, and Tug was always my favorite, so we kept in touch after that.
And so you're a big baseball fan. You're a big...
Oh, I love baseball. Phillies.
Have the Phillies ever won the series?
Yeah, 1980. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. That just thrilled your heart.
We've come close. I think it was 93. We came very close. And why Jim Fregosi put Mitch Williams in the ninth inning is beyond me. And I'll never forgive Fregosi for that.
You need to talk to...
He crossed the series.
You need to talk to Don Patterson. Don Patterson and Tom Houston are both rabid baseball fans.
Okay.
My wife is coaching. Her brother's child, Victoria, is 8 years old, and my wife is coaching a little girls' softball team this year.
Oh, how neat.
And they practice on our little field. We have a little baseball field next door to our house.
Uh-huh.
And they practice on Thursday nights over there, and it's fun. I go over close where I can hear those little girls yelling. I love it. I just love to hear kids having fun.
Oh, I do, too. That's the neat thing about South Philly. On summer evenings, we don't have too many kids on our street anymore, but when I first moved here, we had a lot of little ones. And it was so neat to open your windows on a summer evening or a Saturday morning, you know, and they'd be out playing in the street and just having a great time. And, you know, dads would be out there with their little boys, and they would be playing, you know, a little bit of baseball, you know, stickball, whatever, you know, street hockey. And it was fun.
I love to hear at my pool sometimes in the summer they'll have little parties, and you hear the whole pool will just be screaming, squealing kids. And I love it. I love to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Because a totally blind person, in a lot of ways, that aspect of childhood is taken from them because of their blindness. They can't run. They can't, you know, they're not real good at hide and seek. They can't run and they can't hit a ball. And they, you know, childhood is different for a totally blind child than it would be for a sighted child or even you, a partially sighted child.
It is. And also, sometimes you're excluded because you have a vision problem. You know, like you said before, kids can be cruel.
Yeah.
They don't mean to be, but they don't want to be around you because you slow them down or they may have to do something for you. And they don't understand, you know, that they have to or why they have to, and it just, it really does. You're kind of cut off sometimes.
And the old story holds true that if you get three kids together, two are going to gang up on one. That's always works like that. All right, before we go, we want to talk, and you have seven cats. They all have names.
Uh-huh.
They all live in your house or around your house, or where do they...
They live in the house. I don't let them outside because it's not safe.
They don't go outside. They're in the house.
Uh-huh.
Do cats have a pecking order like dogs do?
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of, you know, one of them is sort of boss and keeps the other ones in line, so to speak. But the house is big enough that they can spread out and nobody, you know, really steps on anybody else's toes.
You know, seven cats is bordering on fanaticism, Nancy. You know that, right?
I've been told that.
That's getting close now. We'll worry about you.
Well, no, you don't have to worry because, you know, being that I'm getting up there in age myself, you know, you don't want to get too many because if something happens to you, what's going to happen to your animals? It's somebody else's responsibility to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And my feeling is, you know, I'm not getting any more because when these guys go, I'll be in my 60s. And what I would like to do then is to get one more, or maybe two, to live out my life with.
But just when these, you're not going to replace each one as they die, as they leave,
no.
As something happens to them?
These guys go, and then I get the new
one. Is this the most cats you've ever had, seven?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, then we won't worry about you. All right, you folks don't have to worry about her. I just wanted to alert everybody. They don't have to worry about her. Nancy, I'm not a bit worried about you. You seem you've never married.
No. I almost got married once, but I knew it wasn't going to work, so I broke off the engagement. And I am seeing a fellow now. I'm not really in any rush because I know that if I decide to get married, it would be a very big change for me, you know, of never being married.
As long as you've lived alone, darling, it would be a tremendous change for you. It would be almost undoable. You'd really have an adjustment period.
Oh, yeah.
Living alone. I know that as I lived alone 3 or 4 years before Luann and I got married, and then all of a sudden there was somebody in the house, and I wasn't by myself. I couldn't get up and you know, make a lot of noise at 2 o'clock. It was just entirely different. But good luck with your romantic endeavors, if that's what you want. Molly Ivins said, somebody asked Molly Ivins why she never married, and she said, well, nobody I wanted to marry ever asked me. And yeah, I thought that was a pretty good point. All right.
Well, we're just taking our time, and if it works out, you know, great. If not, well, at least we can still be friends.
But believe it or not, we've killed an hour, or actually about almost 55 minutes we have. And Skype didn't drop out or anything. I called you on Skype.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did, and it did not drop out. You're going to get yours up and working, and you're going to let me know when you do, right? Get your laptop.
I sure will. I've got the computer just about transferred over from the desktop to the laptop, and I just need a little bit of tweaking here and there, and I need to get a copy of Microsoft Office, which a friend of mine is getting for me, and once I get that in and a few other things, I'm up and rolling.
All right, we're gonna go because we're completely out of time. I'll let you know when we run this, and you let me know when you get Skype going. All right?
I sure will. Thanks a lot, Phil. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you, Nancy. Enjoyed every minute of it.
It is my fervent belief that blind persons, regardless of race, creed, color, or party affiliation, should have the same information concerning United States currency as their sighted brethren.
Now, if you think this is a great idea, thanks to the American Council of the Blind, there is something you can do.
You'll find a screen reader-friendly site and an online petition waiting for you at www.moneyforall.info.
That's www.money4all.info.
Come be a part of history with the American Council of the Blind. www.moneyforall.info.
Well, we always like to remind you that if you'd like to be a guest on the show, we would certainly love to have you. You can call me, 936-634-9500, or you can email me, phil@philparr.net, or philparr@consolidated.net. Phil Parr is all one word in both places. phil@philparr.net, philparr@consolidated.net, 936-634-9500. Love to have you as a guest. Come and do it with us. Some people even think it's fun. I certainly do. We'll see you next week on Blind Like Me. Thanks much.